You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
We're on. Hey, this is Joe Martech. This is February 1st, 2017. Can you believe that?
Amazing.
January flew by.
And you know, do you remember when the year 2000 came and the world was going to come to an end? And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it was so funny because I saw an old church bulletin that said basically this turn of the millennial was the world was going to come to an end. And it was from the year 999 to 1000. And so it's been going to come to an end for a good long time, but I don't think the dates have anything to do with Armageddon. So
no.
1-888-221-8990. Now, class, this is an important number. You're supposed to write this down. Keep it by the phone. 1-888-221-8990. Now, you got Joe Martech, financial advisor, also called a stockbroker. Other members of the team are not here today, but they include Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, and last but not least, the one that's almost always here, Vince Rosino, CPA. So what we've tried to do over a period of many years, we think we started doing these shows somewhere before 2004, but none of us can remember back that far because we're old now. So the key was we put together a group of local professionals that tried to cover most of the areas that most people need to have information on from time to time in order to help people. And thank you, Lord, we have been able to help a lot of people, and we answer a lot of questions. And I kind of like it. We have Pastor Dave sitting in here today for Pastor Tom. Now that I've taught Pastor Tom everything he needs to know, he doesn't need to sit in these things anymore.
Whereas I'm at your feet.
You're still somewhat of a neophyte.
Yeah,
you're still in the learning curve. And then we also have a special guest star here. And this is a converted rabbi, Dr. You are technically a doctor, are you not?
Well, I do have a juris doctor, so I guess, but lawyers aren't called doctors.
I know, but it's juris doctors.
It is.
That is the definition, right?
That's right.
JD, a converted, and the reason I call him a rabbi, because the strict definition of rabbi is teacher.
Right, and that's the whole purpose of this show, isn't it?
So you can wear a couple of hats here, even though you don't have one on today. You're a converted Jew that's... You get to celebrate all the holidays, right?
Messianic.
Messianic, right? So, Jew for Jesus, and Alan is quite a treat because he and I get to banter and beat up a whole lot of subjects because in his illustrious career, he also was a financial advisor. So he still plays and dabbles and has systems and stuff, and we talk stock market and strategies, etc. In the meantime, any questions you might have, that's what we're sitting here to answer. Any way we can help, that's what our job is to help. We get different kinds of questions that come in. In fact, Pastor Dave just came up with a question just before the show. And let me paraphrase and see if I've got this right. Daughter of yours who is pushing 30.
Is 30, yeah.
Is 30, who's on her PhD, right? Mm-hmm. When's she going to have her PhD?
Probably sometime this year.
So then she will be gainfully employed. Is she employed now or just going to school?
No, she's still writing her dissertation.
Boy, that dissertation can be fun.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure she's complaining a bit.
A little bit. She's fairly stoic most of the time.
That's pretty good. Anyway, so then her husband also has what I call a good job.
Excellent job.
Now, how old a guy is he?
He's 30 as well.
Okay, so the two of them are going to make, in my humble estimation, somewhere close to, and I'm talking within the very near future, over $100,000 a year between the two of them, and probably between $100,000 and $200,000 someplace within a short period of time.
I would think so.
With education and occupations that they have. So Pastor Dave said, Joe, what about saving for retirement? And I said, well, you've got cart and horse as far as I'm concerned. Number one thing, when you work for a big company that has a 401k, most big companies offer this savings plan where you can take money out of your paycheck and you don't pay tax on it. It goes into this instrument called a 401k. There are then investment options inside of that 401k, which are usually funds of some kind or other that you can pick from, or somebody will pick for you based on your direction. And the company very often will match whatever you put in up to a limit. Now, the normal limits are somewhere around 3%. So let's say you make, $5,000 a month. You can put $150 in, and the company will put $150 in, which is now called 100% return in 1 month. Now, you know how long it takes to make 100% normally? If you're in a bank, yeah, it's only 100 years at 1% a year.
Well, at 10% a year, it would take about 7 years.
There you go.
Your money.
Yeah, the rule of 72, which, by the way, this is a good rule. Write this one down. Dave, memorize this one. This is an important one. Take 72, divide it by the interest rate, and that's how many years it takes to double your money. So let's put 6 into 72 is 12. 7 into 72 is 10 point something. The point I'm trying to say is it's an easy formula to understand the power of growth and how money can grow exponentially based on factors. So it's something that we don't talk about very often, a rule of 72, but it's a good one to file away for no good reason, but when you're trying to save money. So when you look at a company saying, hey, I'm going to match 3%, I'm going to put 3% in, we have at the end of the year a pretty good chunk of change, and it doesn't take too long, and especially if both have a job with a 401k, they're now setting aside a decent amount of money every year from 30 all the way to age 65, which should be a very substantial amount of money by then. And there is a calculation that we could do that I don't have the right calculator with me. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't know how to use the stupid thing. Anyway, they drive me nuts. You know how you have one of those calculators that calculates all that stuff?
Yes, I do.
Are you good at it?
Thanks to the internet, yes.
Well, we might. Well, did you bring it with you?
No, I didn't.
Thanks a lot. Anyway, there's formulas that you can plug in that show you where you're going to end up in X amount of time based on these suppositions. So that doesn't tell you what you're going to earn on the money on top of that. But let's just use another real broad brush of the stroke. And let's call it the Standard & Poor's 500. Now, most people have heard of such a thing, right? Wouldn't you say, Alan, even if you're not a stock maven, even if you know very little about the stock market, most people have heard the words Standard & Poor's 500.
Yes, they've heard it. And very simply, what it is, it's an index of the biggest corporations that trade on major exchanges in the United States of America. They used to all be American companies. Now there are about 20 of them that are actually not American companies, but they're multi-billion dollar companies, so they're in the S&P 500. And it's very simple how you get in the S&P 500. They take the number of outstanding shares times the stock price, and the top 500 of those become the S&P 500, and it is refigured every quarter.
So sometimes companies are taken out, and sometimes companies are taken in. Usually a couple times a year that somebody is thrown out.
Every quarter.
Every quarter, you think?
It's based on size.
But I'm telling you, how many times do they literally change companies? Do they change?
Four times. Four times a year.
Well, do they change four companies each quarter?
It just depends what the top 500 as far as size is.
And sometimes they make no changes during that quarter.
That's correct.
There you go. That's what I was going to. But I was trying to drag that out of him. He's tough. So here's what happens. The S&P 500, over a long period of time, with these 500 of America's biggest companies, even though they're, like you said, some of them are basically foreign companies, but they are doing business in America, and they've been allowed to join the stock exchange, and they have stock traded on the United States stock exchanges that you and I can buy. Aren't those called ADRs?
Yes.
I got to see. I'm trying to catch him here with something he doesn't know.
What's American Depository Receipts. All that is just a certificate that allows the company to trade on American exchanges.
You see, I mean, he may be old. Of course, he is. I mean, maybe you are. Just forget that part. But bottom line is, there are this 500 companies is called the benchmark. What happens is, whenever we're looking for performance of, let's say, a fund or a stock or anything, a benchmark is the gauge that they say if you do as good or better than that benchmark, you're doing well. If you're not doing as well as the benchmark, normally you're not doing very well. So it's the benchmark. Mm-hmm. Now, in some given years, 50% of the companies out there or some of the funds do worse than the benchmark. Sometimes 50% do better. But literally, what I look at people, especially young people, I say, hey, you've got 20, 30 years. The areas that I like to say you should concentrate your money, if you don't want to be confused about anything and not going to trade every week or every month or every year, using the Standard & Poor's 500 as your basis, you're talking about the biggest 500 companies in America, and they've averaged somewhere between 8 and 10% per year growth ad infinitum. Some years 20, some years none, sometimes they've lost, but given a long period of time, it's somewhere between 8 and 10% per year over the last 40 or 50 years. Is that a fair estimation?
Yes. As a matter of fact, over the last 50 years, I believe the amount is 10.1%.
See that? I was off by a tenth of a point there. You got to be careful. We got a mathematician over here keeping me straight. So now the concept is this. If you have this long period of time, this is not a bad way to go just to be invested in that. In fact, when I talk to people today, Alan, that have a good long period of time, and you know, I've kind of liked the variable annuity because it puts insurance together with it. Now, just let me put a disclaimer in here. When I talk about a variable annuity, I'm supposed to also let you know, compliance says you're supposed to know which company you're dealing with, about their claims paying ability. So you only want to deal with what I call the top rated companies anyway, just from an eliminate aggravation standpoint. But very often, the insurance company will come in and they'll put insurance on there just in case things go wrong to protect the money, whether it's a death benefit or what they call a living benefit that oftentimes guarantees 5 or 6% income forever. It's just to make sure people know what they're doing. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, I had a lady client of mine call me up mad at me. Joe, my son's making 12% a year in this vehicle. And she told me what it was. Check it out. Why aren't I in that? Why am I only making 6? And I said, okay, well, let me find out. And I checked it out. And it happens to be an exchange-traded fund, ETF, which are very similar to mutual funds. And it had the most convoluted charter allowing it to be invested in anything and everything. And it was. A lot of junk bonds. There were some foreign stocks. There was some Oriental stuff. There was South American stuff. There was American stuff. And I said, this thing is almost impossible to trade, to follow. They had so many different areas that they were invested, but the manager was doing a good job, you know, making 12%, and they paid monthly. So the dividend was coming. So I called her back and I said, hey, it's great. It's really good. I said, however, if the economy turns south and all of a sudden the world is in trouble, it could go down in value tremendously, and there's no insurance on it. She goes, you're kidding. No insurance? It wasn't guaranteed? And I said, no. Now, if you were 40 or 50, I kind of like the concept. I think it's a great fund. But you're 76. Mm. And I said, I hate to tell you, are you ready to go back to work in case you lose? Well, maybe I better look at this again, Joe. Point I'm trying to say is you'd look through different eyes at different point in your life.
Right.
Which takes me back, Alan, Dave, to your daughter and son-in-law and what they're going to do long-term and short-term. So, cart and horse. This is Joe Martek talking, and not every financial advisor is going to agree with me, even though I've converted Alan over here to my way of thinking.
For the most part, you have, because what Joe is saying is, Joe is saying you ought to have your house, you ought to have education for your children, you ought to have your insurance set, and then start investing for retirement. And I'm saying that I agree with Joe, but when you have things like 401ks, you are already investing in retirement. And speaking about investing, I'm going to ask people to invest in a phone call. How about calling 888-221-8990? We'd love to hear from you, and if you have a question, please call.
888-221-8990, toll free from any place. And what we were talking about, because Dave's daughter now is graduating with her PhD, her and her husband will have excellent futures and incomes, etc. But the cart and the horse were, get married, one, two, buy a house, three, have your children. Four comes the word education. And I was saying, okay, you make a decision, you and your husband. Are we going to pay for the kids' education? Are we going to supplement the education? Or are we going to let the kids pay for their own? Whatever decision you make that decision, and then you handle your finances accordingly. Then from that point forward, you can start thinking about saving a portion of your income for retirement, unless, as Alan said, you go to work for a big company or a company that has a 401k, which Alan and I 1,000,000% agree on this one. A 401k, which is a company-sponsored retirement plan, very often the employer will match whatever you put in up to a certain amount. Now, 3% is a pretty normal amount. So if you make $50,000 a year, right, what's 3% of $50,000? $1,500, right?
Correct.
And the company puts in $1,500. Now, you know how hard it is to make 100% on your money in 1 year?
Very, very hard.
Very, very hard. So automatically, you have doubled your money in 1 year, and you didn't even have the money in for the whole year. But at the end of the year, you put in $1,500, and now you've got $3,000. Now, this is the smartest thing in the whole world that you can do. And very often, and Dave brought it up, he said he was talking to an advisor because he had a 403B, which is also for nonprofits. And a 403B is basically the same type of vehicle. You can't take the money out before you're age 59 and a half without paying a penalty plus tax. And when you turn 70 and one half, under most circumstances, you have to start taking money out because the government says they want their tax. They want you to, you know, they want to collect the money. But the 401k allows people to save money for retirement. Don't put a great deal of money more than the match, is my opinion. Because very often, if you become more sophisticated, the investment options in 401ks very often are limited or predetermined based on your age. So you've got to look at these things a little more cautiously. But no matter what, even if you went into a money market account and had nothing but nothing, no interest, no gain, no loss, if you put in $1,500 and at the end of the year you had $3,000, that's called a win. And then if it was in the S&P 500, which we were talking about a few minutes ago, and it went up somewhere between 8 or 10% that year, on top of that, you'd have that extra growth.
Well, Joe, I think it's important to give an example of how important it is to save for retirement if you can. And I'd like to give one quick example. Let's say you have a retirement account with $10,000 in it, and you're 30 years old. Now, let's not use the top figure. Let's say 9% you average in growth. Now, under the rule of 72, that means you are going to double your money every 8 years.
Correct.
So at the age of 38, you'd have approximately $20,000. At the age of 46, you would have approximately $40,000. At the age of 54, you would have approximately $80,000. At the age of 62, you'd have $160,000. And at the age of 70, you'd have $320,000 just if the averages hold for the future. Just putting $10,000 in a retirement account at the age of 30, you would have $320,000.
One time deposit. Now, you, Alan, everybody sitting here, supposedly, I've seen people retire with in retirement accounts worth over $1 million. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. They went to work for the right company. They got them into the right programs when they were young, and they stuck with it. And all of a sudden, they're now old people, and they get to finally do things that they couldn't have fine time, and kids got in the way, various things get in the way when they were young. Anyway, there's lots and lots of questions that can come up on how to do this, and there's different ways to do this. Very often a person retires from a company, and they can now roll that money away from the company and put it into a self-directed individual retirement account. Now it's called an IRA. And now you can go invest in a ton of different things, all the way from the bank, which may not pay you much, to some speculation, to no speculation. There's only 30,000 investments out there that you can go into. So what I try to do with people that are not knowledgeable is first educate them somewhat, and then look at their, quote, risk tolerance. Like, when you're 25 or 30, you might be willing to take an awful lot of risk because you got a long time to live, and mm-hmm. you look and say, hey, $50 isn't going to do anything for me. How can I make that 50 turn into something extravagant? Well, yeah. It's pretty hard to do, but the bottom line is your thinking gets a lot different when you're 60, 70, 80 than it was when you were a teenager or a young millennial or what do they call the X generation?
Generation X prior to the millennials.
Yeah. They got these different words now, right? Each one has to. What's the newest one after the millennials?
Oh, you got me.
The punk kids? I don't know. They haven't named them yet, right? What they're going to be called? 1-888-221-8990. Love to hear from you. And if by chance you don't want to talk on the radio, you can call. Pastor Tom will take your call, or Dave, Pastor Dave, and they'll take your name and number, and we'll call you back. We're here to help. We're here to help. And we've been able to educate and help quite a few people. I think I was talking on the last show about a young lady, 31 years old, good job, educated, smart person, didn't have a clue about anything to do with investing, nothing. Didn't even know what stock was. You know, stock is what you make chicken soup out of. Well, there's a lot of definitions for the word stock, right?
Right.
It can be fodder for cattle. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of stocks.
A lot of stock. So stock basically means you own a company. Mm-hmm. So let's say Alan and I want to start a company, and we have different vehicles, but we want to incorporate it. We make it a corporation, and we're going to call it Joe and Allen's Company, Inc., or Joe and Allen, Inc. We now say, okay, fine, let's start up our charter, and let's issue 100 shares of stock, and Allen gets 50, and Joe gets 50, and we each put up our $500 or $1,000 to start the company, and we start doing whatever we're going to do. Now, Dave comes along and says, hey, how can I buy into your company? And I look at Allen, and I say, do we want him? And Alan looks and says, how much money's he got?
Notice, folks, I haven't said a word.
I noticed. Well, what happens is we now own 100% of this stock. This is not what you call a publicly traded company. This is a private company. So if we want to sell some of that stock, it's a whole different ballgame. Now, also, we may have an agreement, Alan and I, that neither one of us can sell the stock unless we sell it to each other at a predetermined price, or that they have to approve who comes in as a buyer, because we're a little tiny company. We got all kinds of rules we can make on this little tiny company. But let's say Alan and Joe Inc. become monstrous, and we're now producing widgets that are sold in Walmart and Sears and Penny's and Costco and who knows where. And all of a sudden, we're driving Rolls Royces, and we got our 9 houses all over the world. And we now have a big public company that is traded on the New York Stock Exchange or other stock exchanges. But let's use the New York Stock Exchange is probably the best known. And there's 100 million shares of stock out there. And each share of stock is worth $100. We now have a $1 billion value for that entire company. And then Pastor Dave comes along and says, hey, I want to buy 10 shares of that publicly traded company. Well, guess what you do? You call your broker. Broker says, no problem. Here's the shares. Give me your money. You get the shares. Just that simple. Just that simple. And it's done almost instantly. Almost instantly. Publicly traded companies are dramatically different than privately traded companies. Also, in a publicly traded company, we talked about the S&P 500. Those are all publicly traded companies that are in it. And the Dow, which is the other big benchmark coin, right, is 30 big companies in America. So then the NASDAQ, I think, is 3,800 companies, give or take. I'm losing my track of train of thought, but it's a lot.
Well, there's the NASDAQ 100 index, which is...
But there's the total.
Basically, the tech industry companies. But then there's the total NASDAQ, which encompasses over 2,000 stocks.
There you go. I know it's a lot. So what happens is there's different, quote, indexes. There's different stock markets. There's also stock markets overseas. There's also some stock markets overseas that cohabitate with the American stock exchanges and have relationships where you can buy the same stock. And Nestle and a few other of the great big enormous companies that may be domiciled in the Netherlands or someplace, oftentimes we trade on the New York Stock Exchange also. There's all kinds of rules that get very sophisticated and very complicated, but the reality is this. Most people today are not too happy with what's happening at the bank. I mean, that big 1% really makes you rich, you know. Like I said, it only takes you 100 years to double your money. So it's a interesting phenomenon. In the meantime, people can have investments. And then people will say to me, like I had a fellow yesterday ask me, he says, Joe, I got $5,000 in the bank. What should I invest in? And I said, how much other cash do you have other than that $5,000? And he says, that's all I've got. And I said, quite honestly, I wouldn't invest any of it. Because $5,000 to clean out your bank account, what happens if you need an emergency money? Now you got to go sell something, and you may have to sell it at the wrong time, and you may take a loss. Plus, you got to pay commissions and fees to get in. So normally, I always say, I call it case money. It's called in case a kid calls, in case mama needs something. And depending on the size of your family, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, that money should be kept 100% liquid. I mean, if not in a bank, maybe in a credit union or in a money market account where you can write a check on it if you need to get the money. But if it's invested in some form of stock that might go down, you might be very sorry. So wouldn't you agree, Alan, on that?
Well, I would. And I also, in my own opinion here, Joe, I think that if you are buying and selling individual stocks,
right,
you shouldn't do it with a small amount of money because of the fact that you need diversity, because what happens is stocks go up and down. Some go up while others go down.
Of course.
Some go down while others go up. And so what I basically suggest is, you were talking about mutual funds,
sure,
and things like that. And my own opinion is that if you don't have $50,000 to invest in individual stocks, go to a mutual fund. The reason is it's very, very hard with a smaller amount of money to control the volatility of the market, because markets have wider swings now than they did many, many years ago, on a daily or even hourly basis. And so you need to, as Joe has talked many times about, knowing your risk tolerance.
And also there's the word called diversify. Let's talk about what a mutual fund is and an exchange-traded fund. They both look pretty much the same. They have some differences, but I'm not going to talk about the differences. I'll talk and give you a generality about what a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund are. Now, there's hundreds and hundreds of companies that do this. In fact, there's more companies that have mutual funds and exchange-traded funds than there are stocks available. So many, many companies have the mutual fund companies have the same exact stocks in them. As an example, if we have a Standard & Poor's 500 index fund, then there's probably 100 different mutual fund companies that will offer you the same exact fund with a different name on it. It can be Joe's Index 5. It can be Allen's Index 5. But I'm talking about they're all the same. Now, what a mutual fund simply means is they take maybe 100 companies or 50 or 500 and they put them into this pie. Now, they may have $100 million, $200 million, couple million in that pie. And you come along and say, hey, I've got $10,000 and I want to get a piece of every one of those companies. That way I'm diversified and I'm spreading my risk out over a whole bunch of companies rather than just having one. This is what Alan was going to.
Right.
Well, they then carve off a slice of that pie and they charge you a fee. So let's say the fee is 0.5% or 1% a year or 1.5 or 2 or 3, whatever it might be. Different funds charge different things and you just need to understand what they charge and understand what the fund's done. And you can look at what it's done in the past. You can ask all kinds of questions and you can learn. There are names on funds very often that give you clues. Large cap. Well, that's kind of a clue. That's big companies.
Yeah, right.
Pastor Davis is putting a cap on his head, but it's oversized, right?
Yeah.
Here comes English language, right, with words. Cap. So a cap can cap something. A cap can be on top of your head. Large caps are large capitalization, largely capitalized companies, big, big companies. Very similar to some of those in the S&P 500. In fact, quite often, it's a lot of the companies that are in the S&P 500. Then there's small cap. Then there's mid cap. Then there's bond funds. Then there's real estate funds. There are funds that are based in the Orient, funds that are based in Europe. There's funds for China. There's funds for Russia. I mean, there's all kinds of different things, and you can get as diversified as you want. But each time you do, if you start stepping out, most of the times people that make these major steps are a bit more sophisticated and they have a good feel for what's happening in that particular region of the world that might be a reason for them to invest in it. All of it is education. So what my job is more than anything when it comes to people investing is first to make sure you understand what you're doing before you jump in. And I've had some people recently that had 401ks. And they were in something. They didn't have a clue what they were in. And they said, Joe, can you tell me what I'm doing? And what should I do? Oh, boy, that word, what should I do, is a magic, magic thing. It's because my next question is, how old are you? Boy, women love that question. So then she says, well, I'm 60. I said, how long are you going to work? I'm going to work 5 more years. I said, okay, let's look at what your options are inside of this. Because if you're going to stay invested for 5 more years, normally, you don't want to be in things that may be high risk. You want to go into some things that look pretty good. Also, if you never want to look at it and you never want to pay attention to it, you want to mitigate your risk more and more so that you're not taking much risk. I've had people that say, I'm at risk. I can lose money. You're kidding. I didn't know that. And they're in 401ks or whatever. And I said, well, look at, if you don't want to be and you got 5 years to go, you can go into their money market account. It doesn't pay nothing, but you're matching your 3% out of your paycheck. They're matching your 3%. Hey, that's 100% on whatever you put in per year for the next 5 years. And you're not taking any risk. You're in a money market account that isn't going to pay, or it may pay something, but they haven't been lately. But they don't go down. Normally, they stay pretty flat. So, and at some point, that's not a bad thing. In fact, I had a young widow today that had a 401k account that her husband had. And I said, the first thing you need to do is let him know he died and they'll want a death certificate. And the next thing you do before you make another decision is put 100% of it in cash. And then a month from now, we can sit and look at what your options might be. But right now you're going through a traumatic time. And some of the investments that he's in right now have lost money. And they're going to continue to lose money. So right now, I can look at and I can show you. Right here they are. They've lost, and here's what they've lost, and here's why. You know, don't you love telling the forest and trees, interest rates go up, bonds go down story, and people look at you kind of cross-eyed and say what? Interest rates go up and I lose money?
That's the way bonds work.
That's the way bonds work. So I explained that for the 700th time today, but it didn't filter in. It didn't get past the trees. You know, the forest got gobbled it right up. But you know that story, right, Dave?
Well, I don't know that one, I don't think.
Bonds go, interest rates go up, bonds go down?
I'd never heard that.
Well,
no. So please tell me.
Does it make any sense to you?
It could.
No, wait a minute. I didn't say it could. I said, does it?
Well, not without some explanation.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. I wasn't trying to embarrass you, even though I don't mind.
Oh, no, and I'm willing to say I'm ignorant of a lot of stuff.
Ignorant is not a bad word. It means I haven't been taught yet.
Right.
But once you're learned, then it's all over but the shouting. So let's just use an example. We buy one bond for $1,000 from General Motors, and it's paying 5% interest, and it's good for the next 30 years. And they're going to pay that interest on a regular basis for the next 30 years. And at the end of 30 years, they'll give us back our $1,000. That's one bond, corporate bond. Got it?
So just to put the number on it, they're paying $50 a year in interest on a $1,000 bond.
Okay. But that's what they're doing. Now, we could buy $100,000 worth of bonds and, you know, make a pretty good living at 5% or whatever the number. But bottom line is we bought one. You and I were partners, $500 a piece, because neither one of us have any money. So all we could come up with is $500 a piece. Year goes by and you say, Joe, I don't like you anymore. I don't want you as my partner in that bond. I want Alan as my partner in a bond. So I go to see Alan and I say, Alan, Pastor Dave doesn't like me anymore. He wants you to buy me out that $500 bond that's paying 5%. And Alan says to me, he says, Joe, wait a minute. New bonds are paying 6%. Why would I take an old one that only pays 5% when I can get 6% on a new one? And I go back to Pastor Dave and I say, Dave, he's willing to let you get rid of me, but you're going to have to give him a 6% yield on that bond for the next 29 years. So you're going to have to get less than $500. You might get $400. Because he's not willing to come in unless he gets a 6% yield. So interest rates went up, the value of the bond went down.
Understood.
Making sense?
It does, yeah.
Now, that doesn't always sink into everybody, and it takes a while for it to sink in sometimes. But whenever I look at right now in the economy, in today's marketplace, where interest rates have been nothing, zip, zip, and the last year they've gone up a total of 0.5%, each time they've gone up now, the value of bonds have gone down a little bit. Now, anticipation is, over a period of time, interest rates will continue to go up. And then, do we have a question here, Pastor Tom?
Yes, we do. We had a caller that called a moment ago. She's calling. I'm going to not use her name. She didn't want to go on the air.
Okay.
But she had a question about filing taxes. She said that she and her husband are getting a divorce, and they haven't filed taxes for the last 4 years, and she wants to know if she should go ahead and file her taxes now. And I told her that maybe we could get Vince to give her a ring.
Get Vince to give her a ring, but let me just give you some easy scenarios. Let's say they're not working. Are you still here? Are you leaving us?
I got to go out and answer the phone.
Okay, well, that's good. If they're not working and they have no income, they don't have to file taxes. Number two, let's say they're both living on just Social Security and they have no other income. The odds are good they don't have to file taxes. Number three, if they make below the threshold for filing, and I don't know exactly what that is. Do you know, Alan?
Not offhand, no.
But let's say it's $15,000 a year. If you're below the threshold, you don't have to file. Now, if you have a job and they withhold money from your paycheck and you want to get a refund, you have to file. And sometimes you can get a refund more than you put in. There's earned income credits, there's child care credits, there's all kinds of stuff. So literally filing, sometimes it's all zeros, but if there's a way to get some money back, in order to get money back, you have to have earned something. It has nothing to do with giving you back what you put in, but you have to have a W-2 form that shows they took Social Security, Medicare, and some taxes out, and it can be very little. But you might get, like I know a single lady who make a little over $25,000 a year. She has three children, no child support, no husband, and she paid $1,000 or less in taxes last year, but she got a check for $7,000 as a refund because the government says because of her circumstances, they will give her this big check. Well, guess what? If she didn't file, she sure wouldn't have got that check. So under normal circumstances, it's a good idea to file, especially if you worked and had withholding, especially. Now, if you don't file and you work for a company, they are going to send the same notification to the IRS that they sent to you, and the computer system will look and match. And if you look like you're over the limit that you should have filed, they may contact you and not be happy. That's somebody you don't, you know, you just, it's like 60 minutes knocks on the door, don't answer, because they don't come and say good news. Neither does the IRS.
When that IRS letter comes in the window envelope, open it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, hide it for a while, but it doesn't make any difference. You got to open it, right?
Absolutely.
All I'm trying to say is when it comes to filing taxes, not everybody has to, but one of the things is when Pastor Tom took it, he gave that lady Vince Rosino, CPA's phone number, and she can call him up and give him the exact same information that I'm generalizing now, but she can be specific, and Vince can tell her if she should or should not file.
Yeah.
1-888-221-8990. And in fact, right about now is when everybody in their world is coming out of their socks, because this is the week that everybody's getting their W-2s and 1099s. And it's causing some consternation. This is the time of year I get phone calls today, the first. And they said, where's my 1099, Joe? I said, well, I don't send them out, but the company does. Well, how come I don't have it yet? I said, well, they have until the 31st of January to send them out legally. And I tell you, there are tons and tons and tons that hit the mailbox on January 31st, these different companies, which might take a week before it gets to your mailbox. But people want to file their taxes so they can get a refund. And that's usually the ones that are the most anxious waiting. And I don't blame them. You know, they can get it. 1-888-221-8990.
You know, Joe, you mentioned something a few minutes ago that I think's important to talk about for a couple of minutes. And that is the fact that when you are looking for somebody to help you manage your funds, somebody like you, it's very important to ask the right questions. And what I mean by that is, if you go to somebody, and I'm not talking about Joe, I'm talking in general, if you go to somebody and they say to you, this is what I've done for my clients, and they show you a period of time with charts and everything like that, and it looks very good, that's wonderful. But to me, the most important question is, what did you do for your clients when the market wasn't good, when the market was coming down badly? Did you protect their assets? Did they make money from you, or were the losses in their accounts much less than Joe mentioned the S&P benchmark, which in 08-09 was down over 45%. So that's very important to consider. And the most important thing is, past performance is no guarantee of future results. Somebody can say, I can double your money in 5 years, and 5 years later you have nothing. And you wonder, what happened?
One of the things that When Alan brought up a question that you might ask, what have you done for clients of mine in the past? I don't like that question, because you can turn an honest person into a liar with one sentence, because he may lie to you. And, you know, I've had people, and I've seen it on TV, advertise and say, I'll send you copies of my statements. Well, you know what? I know people that graduated from Harvard, that degree on the wall cost them $35. Because they sent it away to the internet, and they have something that's a phony thing. So I'm very reluctant when people say that. I said, let me just show you what benchmarks have done and what these different things have done during this same period of time. Don't ask what any one financial advisor, and if financial advisors are tooting their horns saying they have done certain things, how can you check it out unless you get a list of 100 clients and you call them? Because he may give you a list of two or three that are his relatives that'll lie to you. You ever heard of anybody lying, Alan? I mean, well, has it happened at all?
Occasionally. That's true. But, you know, there are two different classes of people that we're talking about. The people that are using benchmarks, basically they're going toward mutual funds,
sure,
or structured investments.
Right.
structured program.
Right.
What I'm talking about is people who like to go into individual equities. They might like to play the game a little bit, and they might like to have somebody in the business who has had experience. But the reason I think, and it's great that we're disagreeing, because, you know, it's part of America to be able to.
I didn't even know that we disagreed yet. I'm having a hard time following them.
I haven't heard that yet.
It's important, I think, for a person who says they want to help you manage money to be able to give a person a guideline, not necessarily the nitty-gritty figures of everything you've done in the account.
Let's talk about that for just 1 minute.
But, you know, what will you do if the markets start coming down? What's your strategy? Do you change strategy? Do you change your approach? Do you go to cash? Do you buy different types of investment?
Let's stay simplistic here. Let's stay simplistic.
Okay.
Alan's an old guy, and he lives with an old woman, and they need $2,000 a month income. And they say, Joe, I've got $50 in the bank. How do I get $2,000 a month income? And I say, you don't. How are we going to get $2,000 a month income in order for us to exist? Well, based on what your assets are, you've got a bit of a problem. Because even if we use 5 or 6%, which is not a hard thing to do, especially with certain vehicles that guarantee this kind of income for you, these different vehicles do, it may not be enough. So sometimes they'll say, okay, fine, what else can we do to get that income? I say, well, understand, when you start getting higher income, normally you're taking higher risk. So let me just talk about a generality. Let's talk about REITs, R-E-I-T, real estate investment trusts that are openly traded on the stock market. Now, real estate trusts have to pay out 90% of their profits. This is a general rule on a quarterly basis. And very often, especially in a good economy, these real estate investment trusts, some of them are paying out between 10 and 15% per year. Okay, is there a guarantee? No. Can that change? Yes. Can it get worse or better? Yes. Why would I do such a thing? Well, you want to have extra income, but you want to make sure that you're relatively protected. So how can you do that? Well, let's take a general rule. If I'm invested in real estate and the economy is doing well, normally, the value of that real estate stays the same or goes up. If the economy is doing poorly, like we went through this last recession, real estate takes a plummet and goes down dramatically, which causes these investments to also plummet and go down dramatically. Now, did we see a bubble coming during this last go-round? Well, you had to be blind to not see the bubble. In fact, I had clients at the time, they'd say, Joe, I'm going to buy a house and sell it. And I said, I hope it's not under construction. And they said, no, no, it's an existing home. I'm going to buy it and close on it next week, and I'm going to put it on the market immediately. And I said, okay, because my biggest fear is this bubble's going to burst. And when it bursts, you could be stuck with that price, that house that you overpaid for. Well, there's rules of thumb to use when it comes to looking at these different types of investments. And basically, one of the biggest things going is the economy. What's a real simple rule of stock? If the company is doing well, it means the economy is doing well. That particular product is selling. People want that product. But if there's no buyers out there because the economy is in the tank, people have to eat first. You know, hey, a lot of things go by the wayside, and even a whole bunch of food goes by the wayside. You get down pretty skinny, and the market tanks. So you have to look very carefully at these different options that are out there. No different than I was talking about with this client of mine whose son came and said he's making 12% on this fund. Okay, when I looked at what it was invested in, it was almost impossible to track. Very, very difficult to track. And it might be a very good fund for a good period of time, because now I'm gonna have to interview the managers, find out what their experience is, what their philosophy is, what their credibility is, how long they've been able to do this, under what circumstances they've been able to. And hey, if you're only going to give me $10, it's not worth my time to go do that. Maybe a $10 million account, all of a sudden I can afford to fly to Afghanistan and find out what these guys are doing. I'm joking, folks, I'm joking. But the bottom line is, this is a very sophisticated industry when it gets into big numbers. But when we stay simplistic, let's stay with benchmarks, let's stay with funds, let's stay with insurance companies that say, hey, we're going to protect you no matter what, whether you live or die. There's different ways to go. Don't get greedy. Now, on the other hand, lately, you know, marijuana has been legalized in, I think, 7 states now. Medical marijuana is legalized in Florida. Well, all of a sudden, there's a big rush of people looking to buy marijuana stocks, thinking it's going to go like crazy. And they say, Joe, what do you think? And I said, you putting any of your money in? And I said, no. Why not? I said, I'm fearful. They're penny stocks. The companies could get in trouble. Our government could change its philosophy. The Trump administration hasn't necessarily come out for or against. I've heard rumors. There's different stuff on the internet, whether it's true or not. So I am a bit skeptical. On the other hand, if you say, Joe, I got $500 I'm willing to lose. That's what these things are. These are high risk ventures. So you go all the way from 100% risk to no risk. The no risk is still the bank. 100% risk is penny stocks that they're, wait, no, no. 100% risk is loans to relatives. I forgot that.
They end up being gifts anyway.
They end up being gifts, right?
Isn't the two most important things, Joe, what you're saying is, number one, know your goals, and number two, know your risk tolerance.
Absolutely. You know your goals. And again, very often I'll have people say, Joe, here's $100,000, or pick a number, and they'll say, I want 80% of that to be safe. What can I go? I'll say, okay, fine. Let's look at this annuity contract where the insurance company says they're going to give you a 5 or 6% income for the rest of your life, no matter what happens. It can't go down, but it can go up. Then let's look over here with that $20,000 and look at some things that might have a 10, 15% yield today and say, okay, fine. Maybe we can take a portion of that and go into some of these things and take some risk. Now, what we didn't talk about, though, was stops. Because you also can put in what they call a stop loss. When you buy something, let's say you buy it for $10 a share, and you say, if it goes down to $9 a share, I want it to sell automatically. I took a 10% loss. Okay, now the stop isn't going to guarantee you $9, but it'll be pretty close to that. Because if all of a sudden things take a big, wild, fast turn, and a million shares sell in an hour, and if you're a part of them, you might end up with $8.50, but literally you stopped your loss. So there are protections you can put in place. Again, all of this is education, getting people knowledgeable about what they're doing, understanding their risk tolerance, and then they've got to sign an agreement that says what their risk tolerance is. Because I don't want somebody mad at me saying, hey, Joe, you talked me into this. And I say, wait a minute, on the penny stock thing, Alan, have you seen these penny stock agreements?
Yes, I have.
Penny stock agreements say, wasn't my idea. I don't even know who you are. It's all your money. You don't have a brain in your head. You're doing this ready to lose all your money, and you're willing to do it. And I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, it doesn't say all that, but it might as well, right? I mean, it says it's the highest risk you can take in the stock market is investing in this. And so there comes these marijuana stocks, which people think is going to make $1 million, and they might. And they might. If they legalize it in every state and the companies get bought up and don't go out of business. I mean, hey, look at Facebook, Microsoft, Apple. Just start picking companies that have become home runs. You know, if you were in one of those, hallelujah, I'm happy for you. Mm. When Facebook first came out, people said, Joe, what about Facebook? I said, not my money. No bricks or mortar there. Doesn't look very good to me. Boy, was I wrong. You know, such thing as one person being right all the time.
There's a, can I encourage listeners about what you do, because we've talked a lot today, a lot of complicated stuff.
Oh yeah.
And it's because you know this stuff and I don't.
Of course.
I'm thinking, because I'm listening to you, I'm learning a lot over these last few weeks, but here I am, fairly intelligent guy, but I don't know nothing about investments, and I think I'm probably like 90% of the people in
our. Yeah.
Okay. So and yet so people don't pursue that because they're afraid, or they're afraid of what they don't know. But if people that had a little net disposable income, or even a lot, would come to you, sit down and say, this is my situation. This is what I've got to work with. What do you suggest?
When I, here comes the next question. Before I suggest anything, I ask the $64,000 question. What's your goal?
Right.
And then the goal also includes what's your time frame. Then the next one is, how much risk are you willing to take? When I have a person says, I want no risk whatsoever, and I mean none, okay, stay in the bank, make your 1%. Well, wait a minute. I didn't say I could afford to make 1%. I need to make more. I say, well, okay, the most conservative that I can look for people is when we tie together insurance with investment in the annuity contract, and that they're going to, but again, there's negatives with these. Insurance companies don't work for free. Mm-hmm. Number two, they're not usually short-term investments. They're long-term. You have to look at all the variables and learn. I had a client today that I met, and her husband was pretty sophisticated, and he died. She is not. And I said, are you going to learn this stuff? And she goes, no, I don't even want to learn it. Then I said, well, then you don't want to be into these things that like he was into, because he's into 15 or 20 different stocks, and he's speculating. And let me just show you where he's lost and where he's won, which she never looked at that page. I said, yeah, he's done okay on most of them, but some of them he did very poorly on. And that was also that he was in a number of bond funds, but he may have been out of them if he hadn't died by now, because the bond funds have lost him a considerable amount of money. 1-888-221-8990. And let me tell you, I think Pastor Dave kind of alluded to it. There's no such thing as a dumb question. No such thing. I'm telling you, I'm here to help no matter what. My buddy Alan over here will help. He may be a little more windy than me.
Well, I'm an attorney, so that goes with the territory.
Yeah, right. That's what I forgot. Attorneys charge by the word. So
but the bottom line is, education never hurt anybody.
Education, right. What it's all about. In fact, I had a lady this week that listened to this show, and she made an appointment, then she got sick and couldn't come in, and she goes, what do you charge to educate me? And I said, I'm not going to charge anything to educate you. She goes, how come? And I said, well, maybe you'll become a client of mine next year, or maybe if you don't, you might know somebody else that is. But if I can teach you what to stay away from, mm-hmm. let alone what to get into, right. That's a goal. If I can help you make good decisions in your life. Hey, is there a person among us that hasn't made bad decisions other than you, Pastor Dave?
A couple other people, but
a couple of others.
I've made some really bad ones.
I've always said the last time I walked on water, it was frozen.
I can do that if it's not very deep.
You not know, very deep, shallow, right? Yeah. When it starts to crack, though, we start to worry a bit. 1-888-221-8990.
You got quick question. Someone just wants to know what a 1099 is.
Okay, if you work for somebody and not for wages, but let's say they hire you to do a job, and they're going to say, and we paid you $5,000 for that job, and you're an independent contractor, you get a 1099 rather than a W-2. 1099, they held no taxes out, no Social Security, no Medicare. And I think we're out of time. What do you think? Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Anybody has another question, you call him, talk to Pastor Tom, and he knows everything. Until next week, thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program.
Are we done?
The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.